comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else. And gentlemen, one of the most important things that can happen
each and every evening. There we go. One of the most
if you think about those things, and you know, people have the opinion, I know, that if you think about
Kevin, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can't hear you. Yes, yes, I can hear you now. Thank you. No. Yes. Yeah, everything worked great earlier.
I suspect you can't hear me. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Just barely. Okay.
Yeah, just barely.
All right. What I'm having to do to pick you up is I'm having to click back and forth between two different audio sources. And that's weird because when you and I talked this afternoon, we didn't have that problem, did we?
No, it's everything seemed really smooth.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I've got a witness to this. I've told people before, Michael, that I believe that my equipment here in the studio must be demon possessed. I think it must be. It does weird stuff right when it's time for us to go on the air. And, you know, we checked it out. You and I worked with it and, there was no problem. And then all of a sudden, here we are on the air and it's doing weird things.
It's just my luck, too.
Well, I think it's fitting, though, because we're here to talk about paranormal things, and paranormal things are weird. Tell us the name of the full name of this book, Haunting Illinois.
Okay, the full name is Haunting Illinois, A Tourist Guide to the Weird and Wild Places of the Prairie State.
A Tourist?
Now, this is the second edition of my book, Paranormal, Haunting the Prairie, but the publisher thought that people outside of Illinois might not know what that was referring to, so we had to sort of elongate.
Okay. So it's a long title, but it's a title that, you know, we read the title, we know what the book is going to be about, and that's a good thing.
Oh, sure. Mystery there.
Yeah, so, look, let me ask you to do this for us. I want to jump back to your other book. No, I don't. First, I want you to tell us the web address that pertains to your books, your web address that you want people to know.
Well, my main website where I write about the paranormal is trueillinoishaunts.com. That's the home of the legends and lore of Illinois. It's a series of monthly newsletters that I would write about different haunted places throughout the state of Illinois.
Okay. So we are, we can click that and get over to Michael's site and take a look at it. And I'll ask you to give that a couple of more times during the show. Folks, the reason that I did that right here at the beginning is because normally you can click on the guest picture and it will take you to their website. Tonight, that's not hooked up right. So I want you to be able to get over to his website and check out his books and his writings about the paranormal. All right, now, I want to go back to Paranormal Illinois. That's your first book, and with Paranormal Illinois, what did you do that's different from the book that's out there right now?
Well, this first book, Paranormal Illinois, what I did was I took a few of what I thought were some of the more interesting stories, some of the stories that I sort of knew a little bit more about than the other authors that have been written about it before, and sort of elaborated on them. So Paranormal Illinois is much more of a in-depth look at a few places throughout Illinois. It's categorized by colleges and universities, haunted roads. There's a whole section on Archer Avenue, which is home of Resurrection Mary. Many of your listeners probably have heard of that story. And So the book really is broken down, and there's a few examples from each category that I felt were very compelling.
Okay, and but in the second book, then, if it's not as much in detail, what are you doing with us in Haunting Illinois?
Well, Haunting Illinois is more of a tour guide, really. It contains 200 places, and really my purpose for writing this book is I wanted to create something that was useful for myself as somebody who really visited these places all throughout my high school years, my college years. I would find that there were a lot of locations where, you know, the directions were not very explicit and they were very hard to locate. And so I spent a lot of time trying to find out exactly where these places were, going to them, getting pictures. So Haunting Illinois lists 200 different places, a little bit of information about each place, and then directions on how to get there, sources where you can find out more information about the location. And it contains a little bit about all the different groups and organizations that have been dedicated to paranormal investigation in the state of Illinois. So there's a list of all our paranormal investigation groups here in Illinois. There's a little bit overview of all the books that have been written on the subject. So it's just a really great resource.
You're located in the extreme north part of Illinois, right?
Yes, I'm currently living in Rockford right now, although I've lived really all over the state, in eastern Illinois, the suburbs, western Illinois, so I've become very familiar with all of those areas.
You're born in Chicago, right?
Yes, I was born in Chicago. I was raised there for about 4 years, and then my parents moved out to Des Plaines, Illinois, which is a suburb by O'Hare Airport.
And so you've been all over the state. Right now you're in Rockford. Rockford is not a giant city. It's not a little town either. Actually, just a, kind of a nice, comfortable-sized city.
Well, it's the third largest city in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the kind of place where you get lost in the caverns of downtown. It's spread out a little.
In downtown Rockford, that's a good thing if you don't get lost.
Uh-huh. I've been through there. I like Rockford. The reason I bring this up, I think when we think about paranormal and we think about people investigating the paranormal, we always kind of tend to think, or at least I do, I kind of tend to think, of groups in big cities like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Houston, Seattle, you know, the big Miami, the big cities. And maybe that's because they get a little bit more press than the paranormal groups in smaller places. They have more access to the press and to media. So maybe that's why I think of those. What about Rockford now? What's the population of Rockford?
Rockford, I believe, has between, in the city and the sort of surrounding towns, it has, I believe, between 200,000 and 300,000 people living in this whole area.
Okay. What about paranormal groups? Does a place like Rockford have paranormal investigators?
Oh, yes, very much so. There's a number of different groups. Probably my most favorite group in the area is called the Forest City Paranormal Society.
Why
that's they? Named after Rockford's, I believe it was Rockford's original name was Forest City. So they're a real professional group. And we have a number of sort of freelance guys who go around and kind of do cemetery restoration projects, research the history on different locations, do tours. So there, you know, there aren't very high-profile groups, but there's a lot of people dedicating a lot of time and effort to really, really looking into these places, especially in towns that don't get as much attention as maybe the bigger cities, like Chicago, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why is the Forest City Paranormal Group, why are they your favorite?
Well, I would say, I mean, despite many of the members being good friends of mine, they're a very open group. They're a group that is very professional. They don't take themselves very seriously. They take the work that they do seriously, but I think that's an admirable quality, especially when you're in the field of the paranormal. It's never good to sort of get into, taking yourself too seriously. There's a lot of groups out there that are really into having rivalries, and they sort of sabotage the events that other groups have. And, you know, they compete over different locations. Some groups will claim to, like, own a particular location, and they won't let anyone else nearby. The Forest City group is nothing like that. They're very open. They'll invite people along on investigations. They know what they're doing. So I really think they're in a higher class.
Mm. Well, that sounds like a group we might need to get in touch with and talk to about, perhaps being guests on the show here. Look, you've written two books now about the paranormal. Obviously, that means you are a writer.
Yes.
But is the paranormal all that you write about?
Oh, certainly not. I've written several papers on historical subjects. I presented some of those papers at the conferences on Illinois history in Springfield for several years. And I also write sort of opinion columns, society, politics, freedom, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written a couple of novels. So really, I'm kind of all over the map.
Okay. I thought that was the case. So that brings up this question. Since you have all these other interests and you're writing about them, why the paranormal? Because, you know, out there in, I'll use the term polite society. the mainstream society. I think they would look at you in the paranormal after they've read all your other columns and your articles and your novels. I think they would look at you and say, in this paranormal connection, what's a nice guy like you doing in a place like this?
Well, that's certainly true for the historical field. They're real hesitant. See, I'm of the opinion that folklore and ghost stories are an integral part of understanding the past, and they're a very good way of getting a glimpse of the past. But established historians do not think that those stories have any place in the historical narrative. So they definitely look down on that subject. But I've met a lot of people who have stories, even skeptics that I know, have witnessed something they couldn't explain, or they knew somebody who had an experience. People come up to me all the time and tell me stories. In terms of the political writing, a lot of the people who say are of my persuasion are also interested in the esoteric and the paranormal, ghosts, UFOs, that kind of thing. So really, I found a lot more people who were open to it than really who sort of scoffed at it.
It's pretty interesting sitting where I sit. Because, tonight I'm talking with Michael Kleen. Tomorrow night I'm talking with David Serrata. Last night I was talking with Grant Cameron. So, and it's like that every night I'm talking with someone else, someone different, who is out there making waves within the genre of things that we talk about here on the show.
Uh-huh.
What's very interesting is I don't find a lot of people that are, and I ask people sometimes right on the air, are you religious? And I don't find a lot of people who say they are. I find a lot of people who say I'm spiritual, but I don't claim to be religious. And yet, and we have a number, though, of people who say, yes, I am very religious. I'm a practicing Catholic, or I'm a practicing Jew, or I'm a practicing, Baptist, anything. Over 11 years, I've run into all of it.
Sure.
But most people say they're spiritual, not religious, and yet, in these days, I find the questions that all of them seem to be searching out and looking for the answers seem to be pretty much the same group of questions. The conclusions they reach, surprisingly, very often are virtually identical conclusions, though you have some people approaching the paranormal from a religious perspective and some people approaching it from a non-religious perspective, and yet the questions are the same and the conclusions turn out to be pretty fairly identical on a broad spectrum. We have to take a break, Michael. And so if you'll click your mic off there. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Kleene. And let me get that volume up there a little bit. Michael, you said something very interesting a moment ago, and I've talked about this on the show. You said, now I'm paraphrasing, so this may not be exactly what you said. Here's what I Sure. understood. That folklore is an integral part of understanding the history of a people. Is that, would that be an accurate assessment of what you said, or?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I've said it a couple of different ways, and after I say this, I'll let you comment on it, and then I want to get into some of the folklore from Illinois, and some of the hauntings in Illinois. But I have said that, first of all, that a lot of what we call mythology is not mythology. It's exactly what happened, framed in the language of the people at the time. Mm-hmm. It was there. Well, let's put it this way. Here's the second statement I make. There is reality, and then there's our perception of it, our experience with it. And the folklore tells you what their experience with it was. Something happened, and in our 21st century mind, we may explain it one way. Okay, they explained it another way. It was the same reality, but they explained it in another way, which we today call mythology or folklore. Mm-hmm. But it's a snapshot of how they experienced that reality. Now, that's what I usually say about it. What do you think about that?
Well, there's certainly two ways of looking at it. I think I've often felt that some of the old mythologies of, say, the ancient Egyptians or Sumerians, the way that they would describe how they believe the universe was created and the afterlife and that sort of thing, I've often wondered whether their myths of their gods weren't just their own sort of metaphorical way of understanding how the cosmos worked. And when we go back and look at it, like you said, we sort of misinterpret it. We feel like maybe they literally believed, you know, some of these things that we take to be absurd. But, you know, we often impart morals and values through stories to our children, you know, oftentimes colorful, absurd stories. So why couldn't it be that the ancient Egyptians did a similar thing, and that maybe they were speaking metaphorically when they told those tales? So that's sort of one way of looking at it. The way that I was sort of alluding to when I was talking about folklore informing us on history is particularly, I can speak from experience here in Illinois, you know, a lot of the folk tales involve everyday life, the average everyday life of people that's not necessarily preserved in the history books. You know, history, especially from that day and age, let's say the 1800s, it was mainly big events, important people, who built the railroad when, you know, that kind of thing, not necessarily describing how the average person lived. Now, folk stories, on the other hand, often had very detailed narratives about what it was like migrating up from Kentucky to southern Illinois. There was a ghost story about a man and his wife who had taken a covered wagon up from Kentucky, and they found an abandoned cabin to stay in, and nobody was staying in there. And when the husband went out to the next farm to get water, the next-door neighbor told him that that house was supposed to be haunted, or as they called it at the time, painted, in their southern accent. So that whole story sort of tells us a little bit about, you know, how people migrated up there, what they used, how they found shelter, that people built these cabins, and then they'd live there for a while and move on and abandon them, and new people would come in. So it's those kinds of stories that really tell us about that. And they tell us a lot about the anxieties of the people, what they were afraid of. There are a lot of stories from the early pioneer days in Illinois about panthers, which were actually mountain lions. They called them panthers, giant snakes, all sorts of battles with the wilderness. So it gives a really great snapshot of our history. And it's really a shame when people, especially historians, just dismiss that as though the perspective of the people at the time doesn't really matter.
I think, there we go. You know, we started the show saying, I started the show by saying you and I tested this today, and absolutely everything worked as it was supposed to, and I didn't touch anything. I promise you folks, I didn't touch anything. Now, this is an example of what you were just talking about and what I've been talking about. I say, rather jokingly, okay, I think that my equipment must be possessed. Okay? Obviously, I'm not speaking literally.
Right.
But if somebody writes that down and 1,000 years from now someone reads it, they will say that was some kind of religious mythology.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, that's what I'm talking about. A lot of the things that we think are mythology were probably just like that. It's an expression.
There's a habit of historians and anthropologists, whenever they can't explain something in ancient ruins, they automatically say it was religious.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not making a religious statement, and you understand it, and I understand it, and everyone listening to us understands that, because we're all in this same context of the 21st century, and we get it. We understand the idioms. But I think
right.
A lot of the things that people call folklore or mythology really are just like that, in that there was a real event that happened, just like our audio did something very real and nasty to me here just a moment ago. Okay, it was a real event. I made a comment idiomatically that all of us understand is tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
But people 2 centuries from now, 2 centuries, maybe not even that far, they will not be in this same context and may not understand that as a tongue-in-cheek phrase to describe a very real event. And I think we do the exact same thing to other ancient cultures, and I think we do it with the Native American culture right here, even now, because their stories, their folklore, told to their people, makes sense to their people. And then from the outside, we look at it, and we look at it through a different set of lenses and a different context, and we don't understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think if somebody from a past culture or a future culture were to walk into any mainstream church, be it Christian or whatever denomination, they would probably be very confused as well, whereas we would find comfort in what was being said. They might interpret it a whole other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of this folklore and some of the haunting stories, or stories of hauntings, around Illinois. You told us that you've been interested in this since high school, right?
Oh, yes.
Why?
Well, you know, I've been asked that question about 100 times in my life, and I can't really point to one thing. You know, some people have had their own experience, something profound happened to them. I think it started out with really some events in my childhood, you know, where I think back and some of my close relatives died around the same time when I was very young. So I became very fascinated with death and frightened, you know, of it, and wanting to know what happened when you died and if there was anything beyond that. So that got me interested. But, you know, when I think about it, I've really, even when I first learned how to read, some of the first books that I picked up were books about ghost stories. It's just been something that's always fascinated me. And so when I finally got my driver's license in high school, I was actually able to go out and explore some of these places. And that's where a lot of people, I think, get their first taste of it. You know, people drive up to Cuba Road on the northern suburbs of Chicago, or they drive down to Archer Avenue and try to get a glimpse of Resurrection Mary. It's sort of a coming of age rite in the modern sense. So I get caught up in that, definitely.
Well, and, you know, look, there are some things that are just fascinating to us, and we don't really know why they're fascinating. I don't have a scientific answer for why I find the whole thing of UFOs fascinating, ghosts. Why do I find that fascinating? I don't know. But I do find both of those very fascinating. As I have gotten older and as I have had some close calls, very close calls with, shall we say, the other side, I've become convinced, as far as I'm concerned, there is no doubt that when we die, it's not over. There is no fat lady that's going to sing and then it's over, in my opinion. I personally see death as nothing more than walking through a doorway, and now you're in another room. Other people see it another way. I understand that. But that's the way I see it.
I wish I was as confident as you.
Well, if you've been as dead as me, then you would be. So, I guess, you know, I was already fascinated with this subject of ghosts. However, I think that added to it. I think that added to the fascination. So, let's start off with the one everyone probably has heard of. And let's start off with Resurrection Mary. What's the story there?
Well, the story basically is that people will drive down Archer Avenue, which is a road that runs through the southwest suburbs of Chicago, and they'll pick up a young girl, usually in her mid to late teens, wearing a ballroom gown, and she'll instruct them to drive her to the the Gates of Resurrection Cemetery. Now, the people in the car are very sort of reluctant to leave her out, but she insists that this is the place that she needs to go. And, of course, then when they stop by the cemetery, she vanishes. Now, this is a very famous folklore motif called the Vanishing Hitchhiker. There are stories of vanishing hitchhikers all over the United States. A lot of times there'll be sort of an addition where she'll leave something in the car, like her sweater, and the man, you know, finds the sweater in his car and returns it to where she said her home was the next day. And her mother will say, no, you know, my daughter died in a car accident several years ago. That's impossible.
Okay, and we got to step away for break. I want to pick up right there with Resurrection Mary when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this, maybe with audio. Okay. All right. We've got you back. This cannot happen. Okay. This cannot happen. I've got my mic on channel 2. I've got your mic on channel 3. That's where they're supposed to stay. There's no possible way for them to jump to another channel. Okay, because they're
physically... I'm telling you, it's me. I think I've jinxed the whole thing.
They are physically plugged in. The mic cable is physically plugged into channel 2. I have to go channel surfing over here to find out where it is. Right now, I have the volume up on channel 6, and we're plugged into channel 2. It can't happen.
Huh.
It's your fault. There's something about... Something about you that's paranormal. No, what that means is there's some kind of a short in that board over there. But it's, anyway. And we just recently moved the studio Sunday. We moved all the equipment and probably disturbed. You know, it was a problem beginning to happen, and it was just not, everything was okay as long as we didn't move it. But when we moved it, it disturbed it. All right. So Resurrection Mary is over at Archer Avenue, and that's in Chicago, right?
Right, in the southwest suburbs.
All right. So there she is in the southwest suburbs. She catches a ride with somebody. Somebody stops and picks her up. She instructs them to take her out to Resurrection Cemetery, and she gets out of the car over their protests, sometimes leaves a sweater or something, and then the people will return it the next day to the place where she said she lived. Mm-hmm. And then the mother says, she's been dead for a number of years. This is impossible. Have you checked into this?
Yes.
Have you talked?
Well, I've looked at what a number of people have written about the story, and over the years, people have tried to find sort of an earthly origin to Resurrection Mary, that they think that they'd be able to find a accident or something that might have happened along Resurrection Avenue in the 1930s, which is when most people say that she died. And they've come up with a few sort of explanations. There are a few women that might match the description, but it's never exact. One of the girls brought forward was 12 years old when she was alive, which is way too young to match the story of Resurrection Mary. So there's very little, let's say, historical background for the tale. And what I think is fascinating, though, about the story are ways that it doesn't match up with the folklore motif that I was referring to earlier, that of the Vanishing Hitchhiker, which is basically the story that you described. but it's been told all over the United States. Some of your listeners probably have even heard a similar tale. But the way that Resurrection Mary is different is that early on in her career, during the 1940s, it was said that she would jump up on the boarding rails of the cars driving by.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, more recently, there'll be times when either cars or trucks will believe to have hit somebody. The driver will actually see this person being struck by their vehicle. There'll be blood, you know, sometimes, and they'll get out very concerned. They'll call the police, and there are police reports to back these incidences up. Of course, when they get out of the car, though, then there's nobody there. There's no girl. Other times, there's at some of the bars across the street from Resurrection Cemetery, people will see a blonde, you know, in there who will later vanish. There was one cab driver they described who came rushing in the bar and asked, well, where's the blonde? And they asked, well, who are you talking about? Nobody's come in here. And he said that he'd been waiting out there for like 30 minutes for this woman who said that she was going to just be a few minutes, but nobody ever saw anybody go inside the bar. Now, the last sort of difference is that Resurrection Mary is one of the only ghosts that I'm aware of that's left physical evidence behind. Now, there's a story that during the 1970s, a police officer from the suburb in which Resurrection Cemetery is located saw a woman at night behind the bars of the cemetery, behind the gates, and she was clutching at the bars. And when he stopped over there, when he pulled up, she was gone, but he said that the bars were misshapen and sort of bent with finger impressions on them. Now, there are photographs of these bars that are bent. The cemetery administrators claim that what had happened is the bars got backed into by some equipment, and the workers tried to straighten them using asbestos gloves, and that sort of like left these finger impressions. It was sort of an elaborate story, but this created quite a stir, and so they actually removed the bars and had them sent off to be straightened, but the sort of discoloration would continue to come back. And eventually they just replaced the entire gate altogether. They don't, the people who own the cemetery, it's owned by the Catholic Church. And, the cemetery administrators do not like talking about the story, that they will claim that, nothing like that has ever been seen if you go there and ask them about it.
Have you had the opportunity to talk to anybody that is a firsthand witness that saw Resurrection Mary?
I have not. I have not spoken to anybody. I know that there are several purveyors of ghost lore in Chicago, Ursula Bielski, Richard Crowe. They've spoken with a number of eyewitnesses, but I have not personally.
So what do you think about this story? Does it have merit?
It's interesting. I mean, on one hand, it very, very clearly is a local version of the Vanishing Hitchhiker. But on the other hand, you have all these other instances that don't really match up with that story. And so it might be a case of actual ghostly activity that people have grafted that story onto. Or it could be that they're just adapting that story to local circumstances. But there are people out there who really claim to have seen this ghost. So I sort of am keeping an open mind about it.
Okay, so as you've gone around Illinois looking for the various haunted places, and doing research for your book, did you run across any stories that, now we have to take a break, we'll get your answer when we come back, but any stories where you said, this one's real? We'll get your answer when we come back. We have to step away, and we shall return, folks, don't go away. right, we're back from break, and we're going to give this a shot. I think everything is working as it's supposed to, except Mike's video is frozen. But we will get him frozen, and we'll look at him frozen, and then when his video starts again, we'll see that.
Isn't that a beautiful picture?
It is, but you know, this thing is possessed. Okay, we went to break with a question, and the question was, as you traveled around Illinois and you investigated all these various stories, did you run across any story that you said, okay, this one, I think this is real?
Well, I guess I would have to answer that first by saying that there really are, we're talking about two different things. Okay? There are folk stories, ghost stories in particular, that may be sort of based on real events, but they are essentially stories that people have passed down. That's primarily what I write about. Now that there are also paranormal events, or paranormal activity, which is entirely different. That, I guess, you would describe as real paranormal activity. And I think that the most compelling stories are stories where people notice something and may not realize it's out of the ordinary until later when they think back on it. For instance, a week ago, somebody from Peoria was telling me about how her friends worked at this factory that had been there for at least a century. And they would see this janitor that would come in during the day at some point. And they hadn't seen him for a while, and they asked their manager, you know, well, what happened to that janitor? And he said that they don't employ a janitor during the day, that he comes in at night. So they didn't even realize that what they were seeing might have been something out of the ordinary. Now, there was a case, I have to be kind of careful here not to give out too many details, but this was an investigation that the Forest City Paranormal Society did in a small home out in a very tiny town in northwestern Illinois. Now, this was an interesting case because they had a daughter who is about 4 or 5 years old, and their daughter had this imaginary friend. Now, some strange things had occurred in the house, sort of usual feeling of not being alone, you know, cold spots, that kind of activity. But this girl developed this imaginary friend who she would call by various names, one of which was Ouchie Head, and she said that she had a boo-boo on her head. And the parents were obviously disconcerted with this, and so they started asking around about the home. They didn't know anything about it when they moved in there. They asked around the town, and apparently there had been a girl living in the house with her parents who had committed suicide by a gunshot to the head in one of the bedrooms upstairs. So that struck me as being very compelling because, for one thing, there was no way for this young girl to have known about that.
How old was she?
The family didn't even know about that.
How old was she?
She was about 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where she would have heard about that incident. So it is interesting that those facts sort of matched up with each other.
You've been interested in the paranormal for many years. As you told us, even in high school, you were very interested in the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Has this investigation, or I should say research, for your two books on the paranormal places and activities in Illinois, has this research changed your view in any way about the paranormal?
Oh, I would say very much so, but perhaps not in the direction that most people would suspect. I originally got into this very much convinced that ghosts were real. I gobbled up every book that I could read about it. And so when I started visiting these places, I expected to have all these experiences. Well, it turns out after having visited at least 100 of these places throughout Illinois, I never experienced anything out of the ordinary at any of them. Now, granted, I didn't really spend an inordinate amount of time at each location, but nonetheless, I think that researching these places, learning about folklore, learning about the stories people tell, it made me much more skeptical about it. Now, on the other hand, I've seen and heard some compelling things from investigations like the one that I mentioned that do make me think, but I definitely have become more skeptical about paranormal investigation and those phenomena than I was originally.
Well, see, now that's an interesting phenomena in itself, because there are a lot of seminarians who go to the seminary. Every denomination, they go to the seminary absolutely full of fire and brimstone and, total belief in everything that their religion teaches. And they come out on the other end of the seminary, having earned their degrees, with a large percentage of them strongly doubting whether the Bible is, quote, the Word of God, having doubts about the teachings of their religion and so forth. They experience something similar to what you've experienced. So let me ask you this. Would you say that you have reached a point where you are, we'll put total belief at the far end of the spectrum on one side, and complete doubt and maybe disbelief at the end of the spectrum on the other side? Where would you say you fall in that spectrum?
Oh, boy. I would say somewhere in the middle, because interestingly enough, I know you mentioned earlier how a lot of your guests will describe themselves as spiritual. I found myself, as I became more skeptical in my research about ghosts, I started becoming more religious. So it sort of had a teeter-totter effect, I guess you could say, of bringing me a little bit closer to formal religion. Whereas when I was very fascinated with this as a young man, I turned away from religion. So I don't know how to explain that exactly, but that's just what happened. So I would describe myself as an open-minded person. You know, I certainly want to believe in these things. I want to believe in life after death. So please, you know, I would like to really see some compelling evidence of it.
Do you know who Danion Brinkley is?
No.
Danion Brinkley is somebody that you should do a Google search on and read some of his materials. Danion Brinkley has been a guest on this show. He's a man who was verifiably dead for, I could be wrong about it, I think it was like half an hour. And then he woke up and he wasn't dead anymore. He got struck by lightning. And he's really, there are a number of people with similar stories. Danion Brinkley has a way of telling it and explaining it that makes a lot of sense. So anyway, for what it's worth, my recommendation, Danion Brinkley's books and articles. All right. And his YouTube videos. Would you say, if I were to walk up to you on Main Street in Rockford, Illinois, and I say, Michael Clean, do you think that ghosts really exist? What would be your response?
I would say yes, but there's a I have to throw a but in there. The things that we describe as ghosts, I believe, exist. So people hear things, see things they can't explain, shadows moving, you know, all the sort of plethora of ghostly phenomena. We can all call that something. We call it ghosts, okay? But I believe that those descriptions and those experiences actually encompass a wide range of phenomena. Some of it could be simple tics of the brain. Other things that could be caused by things like infrasound. I don't know if some of you or your listeners are aware of infrasound. They're sound waves that vibrate below the range of human hearing and actually cause people to have feelings very similar to hauntings. And then, of course, there's the explanation that it could be the soul of a deceased person walking around. So I think that there are a number of different sources of the phenomena that we just call ghosts, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, I would think so. And I don't think if we come up with a scientific explanation for one or more of those categories of things, I don't think that necessarily would mean it isn't ghosts. Now, let me give you an example. Very famous movie called White Noise, and you may have seen it, where apparently ghosts were providing on a television, you know, the snow on a television set where the station has gone off the air.
Uh-huh. White noise, yeah.
White noise. And all of a sudden these images, blurry but there in the white noise, would appear and and talk to this guy, and these were ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what if we come up with some scientific explanation for, well, the TV set was, you know, it had this, it had that problem, and maybe it was some sort of electromagnetic interference. Okay, that still does not dismiss the origin of the images. Why do EVPs show up on recordings?
Right.
And you don't hear them with your ear, but they show up on the recordings. Well, there can be a scientific explanation that it's some kind of electromagnetic interference. Okay. And what's causing that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that electromagnetic interference may in reality be what's happening. But then what's causing that and making it sound like human voices saying intelligible words? So I don't think that science in any way, no matter how much it can explain and how much it will explain in the future, I don't think it can explain the origins of things.
Right. Well, here's sort of how I envision the paranormal. This is how I would describe it. If you look at statistics, right, I'll try to make this as simple as possible. In statistics and science, there's a model that you use to explain reality, and you measure that model up against reality. Now, that model and reality will never, ever exactly match. No matter how close you can get it, it is impossible for it to be 100%, even if it's 99%. So there's always a very small percentage of outliers. In statistics, they call it error, and we would call it paranormal. So the paranormal is simply events that happen that we don't have any explanation for. So I believe that as we explore the universe and explore the world, the amount of things that we don't have an explanation for will narrow, but there will always be there. So I believe that that our definition of what the paranormal is, you know, will continue to restrict down to a narrower and narrower amount of things as we explain all these other things. But that doesn't necessarily invalidate the experience that people are having. You know, someone can really think that they see a woman crossing the road, you know, on Archer Avenue. And that person is actually having that experience. Maybe it's not objectively the soul of a deceased person that they're seeing out there. That doesn't make it any less real. So that's basically my conception of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like I'm sort of crusading for the reality of ghosts, as though I believe in ghosts. And I want to clear the air for all who are new listeners. I don't believe in anything. My approach, that people read into that, Michael, they read into that, I disbelieve everything. No, look, faith has two ends. It's like a seesaw. On one end of the faith seesaw is I believe. On the other end is I do not believe. And believe or disbelieve is what we fill the blanks in, what we use to fill the blanks in at the end of the data. Mm-hmm. So we get to the end of the data. We still have a blank. We still have a question. Some people say I believe. Some people say I disbelieve. I don't do either. I stand right up in the middle of the seesaw, and I say something is either real or it's not. It either exists or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. If it does, it just does. And therefore, it doesn't require me to believe. Those who are watching the show, you can see me holding up this pin. See that? Now, it either exists or it doesn't. And one of the most foolish things I could ask you is, do you believe in this pin? Believe what? There's nothing to believe. It either exists or it doesn't. Okay. So, now having said that, evidence exists for which I know of no rational explanation. And I'll give you an example. The big tsunami that hit, you know, all around Thailand, India, Sri Lanka, all that area. What was it, 2006, I believe?
Uh-huh.
About 200,000, 250,000 people died as a result of that tsunami. And a lot of people died on some of the island resorts of Thailand. Well, after that, there were people, the beaches, nobody was on the beaches. Tourism was dead. And the very few tourists, and I mean very few, who went there, reported hearing people laughing and playing out on the beach when there was nobody out there.
Uh-huh.
Taxi drivers reported people hailing them, wearing their swimsuits and dripping wet. They get in the taxi, want to be taken to a hotel. When they get to the hotel, he turns around to tell them how much they owe, and there's no one there. But there's water in the seats.
Mm-hmm.
So this is evidence. Evidence of what? We don't know. But it's evidence of something going on that's outside our ability to explain, and therefore I have to say the evidence exists. How you interpret it, I guess, is the rub, but the evidence exists. How would you approach that?
Well, I would argue that just because something is a story, just because something isn't based on an event that actually happened, doesn't mean that it's meaningless. So, I guess the way that it sounded to me like you were framing that is, well, there's either this testimonial evidence or nothing happened. And I believe that there's actually a third way that even if something, strictly speaking, didn't happen, it still has a lot to say about our beliefs and our fears and just our experience as human beings, which is one of the reasons why I study folklore and ghost stories to begin with. So I think that doesn't invalidate the experience. I mean, the human imagination is extremely important. It's a fundamental thing, aspect, I guess you could call it, about being human. And so that's the exception that I would take, would be that those stories are also equally valid, even though they might not strictly be true.
How would you explain the water in the sea?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, because if you think about a ghost, okay, we say a ghost is a spirit, a non-physical entity of a person, right?
Well, wait a minute. That might not be the case. That is one definition that we have come up with of ghosts. But there are stories of ghosts that become very physical, and people can touch them.
Well, that's interesting. I've never had that experience, but I don't know. I mean, you know, that goes back to that old question about how can there be phantom automobiles and, you know, phantom cars, things of objects that clearly don't have a soul. How can we have a ghostly appearance of them?
Okay, so see, that brings up the possibility that a lot of the things that we call ghosts might be very physical, very real, but existing in another dimension, if you will, and for some reason fading through to ours momentarily. Is that a possibility?
Well, I believe so. There was a fascinating book that I read a number of years ago called Strange Matters, where it talked about, it sort of translated physics into common language so that someone like me with, you know, a humanities degree could understand it. And it talked about things like mirror matter, where, you know, when you talk about matter and antimatter, that sort of, I believe it's the left and right of an atom. And so some theorize that there's an up and a down, which would be what we see, and then mirror matter, which would be invisible. But the same amount of regular matter in the universe, there's also this mirror matter, which is invisible. So the theory is basically that there could be an entire galaxies of this mirror matter, and we would never be able to see it or measure it or anything. So that's just one of the theories in physics that I think support a kind of extra or alternate dimension explanation.
Yeah. Well, I've had some very famous, very noted physicists on this show, and I've had some pretty interesting discussions with them about, whole subject of, you know, what is real and what is not real, and what's in this dimension and what's in another dimension and so forth. It's amazing that these physicists don't seem to have much problem with the idea that there can be a parallel universe right here with us. And one of them explained it as radio frequencies are all around us. As you and I are sitting here talking right now, where you are in Rockford, you're being bombarded with hundreds of radio frequencies from all over the world, and so am I where I'm seated. We don't hear them, and yet they're there. But with a tuner, we can tune into those frequencies, and then we can hear them, but they're there whether we hear them or not. And so other dimensions may be something like radio frequencies. They're all around us, but we just not tuned in. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. We'll be right back. back. Oh, it switched channels again on me. Is that weird?
I'm here if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Great.
Okay. Yeah, but my volume is now on channel 4.
We might be experiencing some interdimensional rifts here.
I've experienced a lot of things over the years, and every once in a while I experience something where I have to say, well, that's a first for me, and I have to say, this is a first for me. I've not had a mixer do that before. Anyway, makes the show interesting and gives people, you know, 100 years from now, fodder for talking about mythology when I say it's possessed. Okay, let's talk about dimensions again. Before we do that, I want you to tell people again your website.
Okay, the website is trueillinoishaunts.com. We got a lot of articles on there, interviews with people involved in the paranormal in Illinois, top 10 lists, videos. You know, it's updated several times a week, so check it out.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. And we will get that linked up right after the show. A couple of things that I did today. I mean, I should have known this was going to be an interesting trek across the nighttime because I changed the graphics today, and you and I discussed those. I changed them. I saved them. I tested them. Everything's fine. I opened the program, and I've got last night's guests. Name still under your picture on the other shot when I changed it, saved it, and tested it. But it reverted back to the old picture for some reason. I have no explanation for that. Interesting trek across the nighttime here with someone who writes about the paranormal. Now let's talk about dimensions again for just a moment. I think, you know, there is a sort of a standard version definition of the paranormal, a basic definition. And that basic definition is the paranormal is anything for which we have no scientific explanation. That being the case, most of the universe is paranormal. Because we only, if you take everything we know about our universe scientifically, and compare it to what there is yet to know, we could not fill a thimble with that knowledge. So we haven't even begun to know this universe. So from that perspective, almost everything in the universe is paranormal. Now, there will be people that would argue against that, but hang with me here, folks, and let me explain this. Let me explain this just a little bit. All right. When we talk about ghosts and EVPs, I think some of them are. I do think some of them are disembodied spirits. But I think that there is a great possibility that a lot of what we think are spirits might be little fades from another dimension, another universe that's going on right here where we are. And I'll tell you, Mike, it's, you remember radios used to have a dial. Now they're digital and you know, you go right straight to the next frequency. But right. There used to be a dial and you could get on the edge of a frequency. And you could just sort of hear that there was a radio station there, but you weren't tuned in real well. Do you remember those radios?
Yeah, but I might be a little bit too young for that.
I'm sorry, you might be what?
I might be a little bit too young to fully remember that experience.
Okay, well, these radios were not digital. And therefore, you sort of, as you turn the dial, you sort of slide into the frequency that you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
Where with digital, it goes right to the frequency.
Right.
Okay. sometimes, and even with digital, sometimes if you live in a rural area out on the edge of the signal for a radio station and at the edge of a signal from another radio station where they sort of intersect, you sort of hear them overlap sometimes. And I think dimensions sort of do that overlap sometimes. And we get a little fade through. And when that happens, we may be appearing as ghosts in their dimensions as they appear as ghosts in our dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? You think that's possible?
Well, sure, that's possible. And one of the things that I've asked in the past is, you know, think about, let's say there are these creatures, right, that live in caves that are totally blind. They are not able to see anything. The only way they experience their world is through touch and sound and taste, perhaps. Now imagine if there was a whole group of sensory phenomena out there that we had no organ to receive, okay? So we're like those creatures in the cave, and we're missing this sort of other sense mm-hmm. that maybe some other kind of being has out there in the universe. So there could be an entire part of the universe that we're just completely blind to, you know, and maybe every once in a while we'll bump into it, and that's how we experience it. But we just don't physically have the capability of experiencing it. So I think that's a possibility as well.
Well, yeah, I think that's entirely possible. For instance, we cannot see infrared. And yet, apparently there are some creatures who can see into the infrared. And, of course, we can if we use instruments.
Right.
Infrared goggles or something like that. But just the naked eye, we can't see infrared light, and yet it's all around us. We don't perceive it, but it's there. It's measurable. It's usable if we have the right instruments. Tell you what I would like to do. We're going to continue, you and I, with our discussion, but at the same time, I'm going to open up the telephone lines and invite anyone in the audience who would like to participate in the show. If you have a question or a comment for Mike, then give us a call. Now, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. I would recommend that you not wait until the last minute. Don't put it off, because who knows if we're going to have audio in 5 minutes. Okay? So 623-444-5889 is the magic number that will transport you into this studio. And we will let you talk with Mike. You can ask your question or make your comment. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Mike and I are going to continue. Let me give you the number again, 623-444-5889. And we do have a caller. Let me also say, folks, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I understand you can't make that call without it costing a lot of money. International telephone calls are expensive. So if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you may call me if you wish. However, I also have something called the Flash Message option on our website. Now, you just go to my website and click where it says Flash Message. Right above the picture about tonight's show, there's a link that says Flash Message. If you're in Canada or the USA, we want you to use the telephones because we want to hear your wonderful, beautiful, and musical voice. But please don't sing to us. Okay, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Okay, Rusty, let me turn your volume up if I can ascertain which one it's on. We have to do channel surfing here. Go ahead, Rusty.
All right, hello, Mike.
Hello.
How do you think your prior beliefs or your beliefs now are influencing how you're interpreting, you know, that data. Like you said, you switch from kind of not being as religious as to being religious. How is that influencing, you know, this information that you're getting about the paranormal?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, I don't think that my religious perspective really has affected it that much. You know, I was born and raised Catholic, and I know the Catholic Church has a position on ghosts, but I've always thought that my thoughts are my own, and so I try to look at it with an open mind. You know, so I guess my answer to your question is that I don't really see them as being related. I think that it just sort of evolved that way due to a number of things that were happening in my life at the time.
Okay, and you're talking about ghosts possibly being, or I don't know whether you or Kevin mentioned this, but they could possibly be, you know, disembodied people who have lived before. Is there a connection? Have you found a connection between your ghost and aliens, such as UFO aliens?
I think that might be a question for Kevin. I'm not too well versed in UFOlogy.
Okay, well, I'll answer it, and that is, I don't think so. I think that when we're talking about extraterrestrials, we are talking about people. Some people will call them beings, but we're talking about people that are very real from other worlds other than this one. And they're physical. And if you walked up to an ET, you could reach out and touch. And you would feel that it's a real person. Maybe he looks a lot different. Maybe not. Maybe he thinks a lot different. Maybe not. But when we're talking about ghosts, I think, and Mike, if you disagree with this, it's quite all right on this show. We believe in freedom of speech. You just disagree, and that we'll hear it. But I think when we're talking about ghosts, in my mind, I'm thinking that is disembodied spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And that once inhabited a body that was living, and you could reach out and touch that body, but they've moved out of that body, and but they're still here. I do think that we interpret, Rusty, I think sometimes something happens that we interpret as a ghost that really might be sort of that overlapping of dimensions, where maybe unbeknownst to us, maybe unbeknownst to you, you have appeared as a, quote, ghost in someone else's dimension. You never knew it. And maybe that's some of them appear to us that way, and they're not aware of it. But I could be wrong about that. That's just a theory I have. What do you think, Mike?
That's a very interesting theory.
I see he disagrees with it, but he doesn't want to say so.
Well, I don't necessarily agree or disagree. I mean, it's a theory.
It's a theory. Okay, Rusty. So, what do you think?
Well, I tend to think the same way as you do. I think there are people who just now don't have a body.
All right, Rusty, we have to take a break. You want to hang on?
Yeah.
All right, you hang on. We'll be back, folks, right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Kleen, and we're talking on the telephone here with Rusty. So, Rusty, I wanted to give you the opportunity to finish what you were saying because we had to cut you off right there for the break.
Okay. Well, you had asked me whether my opinion of a ghost were, and this is just a theory that they are people who once lived and no longer have a body. Now, whether they're in another dimension, I don't know, but that's just a theory of mine, so...
Yeah, I would say that a ghost is not in another dimension. I would say the ghost lived in this dimension, and when they physically died and the spirit moved out of the body, the spirit stayed in this dimension. Now, that's my opinion. The thing about dimensions that I brought up is that I think we misinterpret some phenomena as being ghosts, when perhaps it could be sort of that overlapping of frequencies, sort of the overlapping of dimensions, where for a moment someone in another dimension sort of fades through to ours. And I think if that's happening, then we sometimes must fade through to theirs. That's a theory, and it's just an opinion. But I think a ghost lived here, and became disembodied here, and is still here. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think I would disagree with that. Although I would say that if you think of a ghost as being the spirit of a deceased person that's sort of stuck here, I would say that that ghost is occupying the same space as we are. But if you look at in the past, the way people have spoken about an afterlife or heaven or whatever you would want to call it, it seems to be that is where our souls would need to go. And we speak about it as a place, right? That our souls are going to a place which clearly we can't see or experience while we're alive. So I would think that place would more than likely be something like another dimension, that our souls, which are not actually made of any physical thing, would have to sort of slip into, I imagine, upon death. And okay, if something happened to interrupt the process, then perhaps they could become stuck here and show up as ghosts.
Okay. So, we don't disagree. I would say that if there is a heaven, then it would seem obvious that lots of people, when they die, go straight from being here to being there. And if there is a hell, which a lot of people don't think there is, but if there is, a lot of people that are deceased here go straight from here to there. But there have to be a number of individuals that don't leave and go to either place if we're going to say there are ghosts. Or do you think ghosts are something else entirely? Do you think they are not disembodied spirits?
Well, I know that there's a theory that there are ghosts that are disembodied spirits, and then there are other things we call ghosts that are actually traces of energy that sort of appearing when the amount of energy in the air is at high levels. It's called the energy trace theory, that when there's traumatic incidences, some of that energy of a person is sort of imprinted on that area, like a photograph is imprinted, and then later during specific environmental circumstances, that image will reappear. So that's a different kind of ghost. But I would like to go back and talk about Rusty's question earlier about whether religion has influenced my perspective, because I thought of something over the break that where it actually had.
Okay.
And that is that according to the Catholic Church and many other religions, the human soul is not a physical entity. So in that regard, it can't be measured by scientific instruments. Science is designed to study the physical world. And so if the human soul is a non-physical thing, then there's no way for science to ever study it or to measure it or to, figure out what it is. So in that sense, I think that really calls into question the usefulness of science in investigating things like ghosts. So in a certain way, that sort of has made me more critical of paranormal investigation.
Okay. Rusty, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. All right. We have time for one more call. It has to be quick, but if you wish to give us a call, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. You know, you bring up a good point in that science is all about, it's not just about observation, but it's about measurement. And I think when we're talking about ghosts, we can observe, but how could you measure?
Right.
I don't know how you could.
And you can't duplicate those conditions in a laboratory. It's very spontaneous.
Mm-hmm. Do you think? Have you been on? Have you actually gone out on any of the paranormal investigations?
Yeah, I've been on several with the Forest City Paranormal Society, and in which, you know, interesting things had been captured. They've been captured some EVPs. For example, specifically in the basement of this farm, they recorded this whistling noise. This was at 2 o'clock in the morning. This strange whistling on the tape that wasn't heard at the time, that I think you could consider evidence because it's something that was recorded. So there is room for some of that. But in other ways, I think that a lot of the instruments that are used on paranormal investigations, like EMF detectors, for instance, you know, supposedly they detect these heightened levels of electromagnetic fields. But there's no evidence that electromagnetic fields have anything to do with spirits of the dead. You know, that's just a theory that really someone came up with.
So you would not view the, we have to do this very fast because we've got less than a minute and a half here. You would not view a spirit as being energy.
No, that's something that I thought in the past might be the case, but anymore, I think my opinion's changed, and no, I wouldn't.
Okay. Tell us again your website.
Okay, the website is trueillinoishaunts.com. Again, we got interviews, top 10 lists, articles about haunted legendary places in Illinois. So it's a very informative website.
Okay. Outstanding. If you will, stay with me for just a moment, and as a matter of fact, you can, or you can click off. I'll give you a call after I get off the air here. I want to talk with you briefly for just a moment. Thank you for being with us, and ladies and gentlemen, be sure you go check out that website. Also, remember that the Kevin Smith Show is 100% listener-supported. Without your support, and I don't mean you just sort of emotionally for us. We need you to step to the plate and help us with either a donation or join our members area, which is only 23 cents a day. But without that, we're gone in the blink of an eye. So if you like the show and you like the guests we're bringing in, the topics, my friends call me Steel, and my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want.